The following presentation was recorded live by HAudio.com.
For those of you who don't know me, my name's Sam Veffer, and I'm from Toronto originally. And I grew up there. I was educated there. My background is in math and computer science. And I worked for many years as a management consultant in Toronto for Touche Ross and Partners at the time, for Harvey Gelman, Gelman Hayward and Partners. You know Harvey? And I made Aliyah 10 years ago with my wife. We've got six little kitties here, beautiful in Harnoff, neighbors of Herb's grandchildren, too, and children. And I ran a computer business here in Jerusalem for a couple years. I did some research and development at Elsint, for those of you familiar with Elsint. Elsint, you know they make nuclear medical equipment.
Yeah,
we were doing research and design doing that.
Yeah.
You a doctor?
No, I have two sons who are.
Okay. So we were designing that kind of equipment. And since 85, I've been with Aisha Torah. And I set up a couple years ago the Executive Learning Center that's sort of semi-hosting the mission here for people like you people to come and have an opportunity to learn in Jerusalem. That's what I've been doing. Now, the reason why I mentioned all that background is we're going to talk about prayer. And I assume most people here have some kind of involvement, business background. I like to call this prayer for a businessman. Businessman's guide to prayer. I remember growing up as a kid, they'd say, Sam, hey, why don't you come to shul? You know, it's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I'd say, well, why do you want me to do that? So they'd say, talk to God, love God, feel God. You know, like I'm a Jewish kid, so I know, hey, you're not talking about any old man with a beard or anything. You're talking about something that's infinite, right, outside of time and space. And so, yeah. I'd say, well, one hand, you want me to talk to it, but when I talk, one word comes out after the other in time. If God's outside of time, he knows what I'm going to say before I said it. So why bother saying it? Besides, I said it last year. What, he forgot? That can't be. And why do I have to go to shul? Because if he's infinite, he's not limited by space, so why can't I just sit at home and think? What do you mean to have a relationship with an infinite being? You know, as a practical person involved in the business world, prayer and this concept of spirituality is one of the most difficult things for me at the time. Now, Rav Dov, he operates a beginner's mini, does a wonderful job over there helping making it meaningful, but it's a very difficult thing to do. So what I wanted to do today is share some tools, a view on prayer, for those of you who want to try to make it a more meaningful experience that I've gained over the years, and then we can open it up to question and answers because we have a short amount of time. Now, this problem of having a relationship with something that's infinite, talking to God or feeling God, the mechanism has to be different. We have a mechanism for having a relationship with a person. You can talk to a person, love a person. The mechanism has to be different. So we have this concept of prayer that the general idea is, we're talking to God. We're going to have a relationship to God. So how do we do that? So I'd like to break it up into a few pieces. First of all, the word itself, prayer in Hebrew, is tefillah. You're probably aware of this. Lehit palel means to pray. And it comes from the root palel, judge, to judge. Lehit palel means to judge oneself. Okay? So the essence of prayer from the Hebrew point of view is to judge oneself. Great. Now I have an obligation to do it. Let's say I had an obligation to do it. How do I actually execute that obligation? So the halacha, Maimonides, tells us the minimum, from the Torah point of view, is once each day you have to ask God for something. This is the minimum that applies specifically to women at this point, but once a day, ask God for something. So on the one hand, we got, hey, the whole idea is to judge ourselves. On the other hand, we've got to ask once each day for something. What's one thing got to do the other? And by doing that, we're going to feel connected to God. We're going to have a relationship with the infinite. It's a confusing thing, all these different pieces. They seem coming from different areas. So we're going to try and put it all together. The whole point of creation, we're going to have some time later on the mission to talk about this, is there's an infinite being who wants to be a giver and wants to give us the ultimate experience, and that's to experience what God's all about, to feel like God, as it were. One thing we know about God is that God's perfect, infinite, can't lack anything. So he wants us to be able to relate to perfection, to have a relationship with perfection. Now, one way you have a relationship with something is by experiencing it yourself and becoming intimately involved in it. To the extent that we can have a relationship with perfection, it's one and the same idea of having a relationship with the infinite being, with God. God's the ultimate definition of perfection. You see a perfect diamond, you go, hey, wow, that's amazing. Feel a little transcendent experience. You see a perfect dive in the Olympic Games, you go, wow, or a perfect ski run. I know you're a skier, right, Herb? Perfect ski run, a hill, the perfect snow.
Seen one.
Perfect. As the snow is approaching perfection, it's a better and better rush. You go, wow, that's amazing. The extent we're appreciating perfection, that feeling that we have, we say that's really a transcendent experience. That's an external thing. At another level, at the human experience, we say, if I'm going to a busy business, if I'm going to a business meeting and I'm in a rush, and there's big stakes at this meeting, there's a little lady wants to get helped across the street. You say, oh man, this little old lady, and I'm going to be late for the meeting. You sort of resent it. Do it anyway. You come back, yeah, I felt good about that. Even though it made me late and I resented it, I felt good about it. Keep doing it over and over again. One day I'll come along and you'll say, you'll be going to the meeting in a rush, stop, help the little lady without thinking about it, no resentment, get back on track, go back to the meeting, and you go, wow, you know what? I've become a little old lady helper. It's a different level of human existence. You see what I'm saying? I can be angry with my daughter, and it's just like she does something with chutzpah or something, one of my kids, let's say, and I just want to really explode, and I say, no, I'm not going to do it. So I'm not going to get that level, and I control my anger, and I feel good about it. It's a different level when you get so much practice at controlling your anger, you just don't lose it. You don't even feel like losing it. And then you go, wow, I can't believe it. Hopefully I'll get to that level one day. But we recognize that if we get to that level of perfection, that becomes intrinsic perfection, and we feel it, we get this one-to-one experience. Our sages say, to the extent that we're perfecting ourselves and we're feeling a relationship with perfection or God, it happens. Up, down, up, down. Okay? Can't be any other way. So if that's the case, the more perfect we become, the more we're going to be connected to the infinite. You know, everybody says, isn't the bottom line just to be a mensch, be the best person you can be? Well, basically, the bottom line is that. To perfect ourselves as human beings and the world, and we're going to have this connection with perfection, the infinite God. Now, if that's true, if you guys are in business, you're in, let's use construction, that's a good example. If you've got a major building project, and it's going to be perfect, you're going to complete it, it's going to be beautiful. Now, if you just start out at the beginning, say, we're going to go build or develop a building or something like that, and just start and go without stopping, it's not going to work. In any big enterprise, you have to stop and you have to have milestones. See, what we're talking about in terms of achieving our potential as human beings, I have to say, where am I? What are my strengths and weaknesses? That's point A. Where do I want to be? What's my potential? That's point B. For myself, I know there's a big gap in what I can become, what I want to become, and where I'm at. If you take a big project like that and just start going without any milestone meetings, without any set, you're finished. In the beginning, you can be a few degrees off. If you wait too long before checking in, measuring, and correcting, the walls aren't going to meet, right? Now, if you spend your whole day, every centimeter or inch, measuring, you never have time to do any building. You'll never finish. So the name of the game in business or any major enterprise is finding that fine balance between checking in, evaluation, and making progress, doing the job. And at one level, that's really what prayer is all about. If we look at it this way, it can be a tremendous tool for us. Prayer can be a milestone for checking in with ourselves. Remember, self-judging. I'm going to take time out. How am I doing against my goal? Okay, so for men, the sages say, hey, three times a day. Three times a day is a time to check in, take a time out. How am I doing against my goal? What are my goals? How am I doing? For example, you know, it's mincha time. It's afternoon. Working on anger, let's say. How did I do this morning? My goal. When the secretary forgot to send the fax out, like, how did I do? Okay, how did I do? How am I going to reevaluate and continue later on the rest of the day? Comes to the end of the day, how did I do in the afternoon based on what I learned? That's an idea, okay? Idea is checking in, how are we doing against our goals? It's a milestone meeting. Now, if that's true, Where does this asking business come in? He said, I want to judge myself. I want to take time to judge out how am I doing in terms of my perfection. And the way I do that is by asking for something. What's one got to do with the other? How does asking for something, what's that got to do with judging myself? So I'll give you a couple examples. It's actually brilliant. It's really a brilliant technique. There's a few levels that asking is going to help me judge where I'm holding. You know, Rosh Hashiva always says this, Rabbi Weiner, he says, you know what, go down to the Kotel, you're here, the Almighty loves you, constant blessing, you can have whatever you want, right? Go down to the wall, you can ask forever you want, whatever you want. Now, I can have a lot of ideas where I'm holding, but when I articulate it and I said, you know what I'd like? I'd like a big house. That says one thing about me, right? I'd like health for my family. It says something else about me. The kind of person that I am is directly reflected by the goals and aspirations of what I want, what I'm striving for. Even more than what I'm doing. Even more than what I'm doing. We can appreciate that. See, if I'm a guy who's a little old lady, I help a little old lady, that doesn't say about as much as me what I want to become. See, I could be somebody that's resenting it on my way out into becoming a mafioso, and I'm on my way out, I happen to stop and help her. I could be the guy on the way in. Help the little day. The same action isn't necessarily going to tell you who you are, what your essence is, what's making you tick. Our goals, our aspirations, what we're asking for is a tool to help us figure out what kind of a person am I, what am I want out of life. That's one tool. That's even more practical. An even more practical vehicle for telling us, judging ourselves. I'll give you an example. I had somebody here, friends from Toronto, who wanted to learn Hebrew. This is what this particular fellow and his wife and he were here on a previous mission. They wanted to learn Hebrew. He did. So we're using this example. You know, he wanted to learn Hebrew. I said, great. So you know what to do? Here's prayer. It's an opportunity. That's one of your opportunities for growth. You got this little section in the davening prayer that says, ask me for wisdom. So we don't have to get stuck with those words only. You can add your own. So I said, when you're asking for wisdom, ask the Almighty to help you learn Hebrew. You got a block, right? So I said, this particular gentleman, so ask for it. He says, okay, fine. Now, this is his goal. It's a short-term goal. We got long-term goals. We got short-term goals. Throw the short-term ones in there also. Oh, God, give me the wisdom to learn Hebrew. Do that at mincha time. Then do it at Maariv in the evening. Or even if you just want to do it once each day. Ask for it again. God, give me the wisdom to learn Hebrew. God, give me the wisdom to learn Hebrew. God, he wants you to learn Hebrew after all this beautiful text and learning that's opened up if you learn the Hebrew. God, help me learn Hebrew. If you keep asking, did you open up a book? Right? Did you open up a book from the time? It's like, God wants you to learn Hebrew. I read in a book by Jacobson. He said, the blessing is out there. You could have a decree coming down for a bumper crop that year. But all the rain in the world is not going to do anything unless somebody digs a hole and puts a seed in. The Rosh Hashiva used the example of the lottery trick. Help me win the lottery. Help me win the lottery. Buy a ticket already, stupid. Right? That's the Rosh Hashiva's example. Now, if we use this tool, people always say, well, why do I have to keep asking for the same thing over and over again? Well, that's the whole point. If you only ask for it once and you don't get it, you forget about it, go on. You see, if you ask for the same thing and you don't get it, and you ask for the same thing and you don't get it, and you ask for the same thing and you don't get it, why aren't you getting it? See, from the point of view, is you can have everything. It's like, yeah, open up the book. Learn some Hebrew. Did you crack the books? Now, one of a few things has to happen at that point. If we keep asking for the same thing over and over and over again, one of three things basically has to happen. Either I come to the realization I'm asking for the wisdom to learn Hebrew and I haven't opened up the book. It becomes embarrassing after a while. You know what I mean? It's like the kid that comes up to his dad and says, hey, dad, can I have a dollar allowance? And the father says, sure, kid, here's the dollar. And the kid looks him straight in the face and walks away. Doesn't take it. So this comes back a few hours later. Dad, can I have a dollar? He says, sure, kid, here you go. And the kid doesn't take it and he walks away. Now, if you're the kid who's paying attention and you don't do anything about it, if we're intellectually honest, it's going to be embarrassing. You got to be embarrassed to keep asking. So one of a few things has to happen. Even if you have to stop asking for it, Well, there's a few other options. I'll tell you a few of the other options I come up with. This is how I do it, right? Either you stop asking for that particular thing and you say, it wasn't so important anyway. That's beautiful. You had an opportunity to judge yourself. What's really important to me? I'm asking for something, but if I'm not willing to work for it, hey, you know, I've learned something about myself. This really isn't me. I don't really care about that. And I get in touch. I'm judging myself. The other thing that that can happen is I just keep asking without thinking about it. I don't even think about the words I'm saying. Just like mumble away. It becomes rote and meaningless. That's another option. I'm not really asking. I'm just saying it. I'm not paying attention to what I'm saying. The third option is I blame God. Right? God, give me the wisdom to learn Hebrew. It's not happening. It wasn't meant to be. God doesn't want me to have it. But which could be true. The reason why I'm not getting it, if I keep asking for it, maybe I'm asking something that's not good for me. It's like the kid that keeps asking for candy, 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 candy every single time. You don't give it to them. It's not because you didn't hear. And the kid's working hard to get the candy, but you're not going to give him something that's going to hurt him. The only way you'll give the kid something that's going to hurt him is if it's the last resort. The only way he's going to learn the lesson is if you give it to him and let him learn through the school of hard knocks. At that point, you may decide to answer them. It's our relationship with the Almighty too, right? The other reason, the reason why we might not be getting what we're asking for is it might not be in our best interests, right? Might not be good for us. If I ask for poison, why would the Almighty give it to me as my Father in heaven? I might be asking for the wrong thing. So we're trying to figure out why. What's our response going to be when we ask for something and we don't get it? It might be not good for me. Another option might be it's the 12-year-old kid that says, Dad, can I have the keys to the car Saturday night? And he keeps asking it for. He's not responsible enough yet to handle it. If you do give it to him, he's not going to make the best use out of it. That might be another reason. So what's the kid going to do? He's going to start working at being more responsible. See that? The fourth reason is, well, and that's tied in with what your answer was, is, yeah, eventually I got to do something about it. And this is the secret. And this is how the pieces come together, is that I'm judging myself, meaning by asking, and if I'm getting or not getting, it's giving me a feedback mechanism. If I'm not getting it, I have to judge myself. Well, what is it about me that I'm blocking? I'm causing it not to happen. And let me make the breakthrough so that between this prayer session, this, I'm going to go out there and act on it and get the job done. So therefore, what I've done is I've got a tool now to help perfect myself. See that? I've got this self-judging period. How I work, the tool that I have to judge myself is asking. And whether I'm getting it answered or not is a feedback mechanism for me to say, what should I be working on? And if I'm honest and continually asking for the thing, then I have to actually start acting on it, and that's going to force me to grow. And by growing and perfecting myself, that's going to give me a stronger relationship with God, whether I like it or not. It has to happen. The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, says it's one and the same thing. It's going to happen. I remember when this was pointed out to me, I had a big problem with God in the beginning. I didn't have a problem with the morals and the ethics and becoming a good person and all these tools, but the God thing, it was a problem for me. When I learned this secret, I said, hey, I can put that on the side for the while, not focus on it so much. If I'm having trouble, I can temporarily just focus this on myself, and in a little while, if I'm really honest with myself and working on it, I'm going to be at a different level. It'll be easier for me to relate at that point. I can flip-flop in between the two. One called dveikus, connecting, investing directly into the relationship, or shleimus, meaning perfecting myself. Ultimately, they merge into the same. Some people, it's natural for them to be spiritual. They're going to invest in the relationship. How do you increase a relationship? Either by being similar, so we got more to relate with, or by working at the relationship, investing in the relationship. Some people naturally feel they can do that. They can say, hey, I could be talking to anybody here in the whole world, but who I'm going to choose to invest in my relationship instead of my relationship with you right now, say, hey, I got an appointment down by the wall. I'm going to invest my time and energy directly into that relationship, and that's going to create a bond. Some people naturally find that easy to do. Many businessmen, we get hardened in the business world. It's hard for us to do that so easily. So I found that this particular tool of working on myself helps me, like, flip-flop up the scale as far as I've been able to get. Now, the question's going to remain. We got a few more questions, and we'll save it for us to open up to you. Is why do I have to use somebody else's words? Why do I have to use this fixed prayer? It's a big question, because now we're saying if I'm honest with myself and I'm doing a whole bunch of introspection, I know myself and I'm getting some feedback and I'm working on it, why don't I just use my own words, and why do I have to use these fixed prayers all the time? So there are a lot of reasons for that. See, there was a time when it wasn't so. The ultimate level really could be and was that an individual would be able to articulate and know themselves so well and have so much objectivity, get their ego out of line, like an Abraham, like an Isaac, like a Jacob, they could go out and say what they wanted to. So we're at a different level. We see that Ezra, who was a prophet, the Anshei Knesset Gedola, the men of the Great Assembly, got together and formalized the prayers. Now we're stuck with their words. You say some of their words, it's hard to relate to. And what we're talking about right now is really the 18 blessings, the Amida, the Shmoneh Esrei. The Shmoneh Esrei is really, the essence of it is asking. There's 13 requests in the middle. And since we want to be mentions about it, we spend 3 blessings praising God, 13 times asking for something, and then 3 times saying thank you. It's as if you're coming into the king, you just don't say, hey, king, can I have, you know, a piece of land over here in the country? Say, your majesty, your imperial highness, you know, great one, benefactor of the nation, if it pleases the majesty, could I please have a parcel of land here? And thank you very much, right? You always sandwich a request with praise and thanks. But the essence of the prayer is the asking. So we're stuck with the things that they choose to ask for. Bringing the judges back, bringing the Jewish people from the four corners of the earth, asking for wisdom, asking for health. We have those 13 categories, which basically cover the broad spectrum, but it might not be the way we would relate to that, the way we would articulate it. We don't feel comfortable with the words. So why is it important to use theirs? I think that the secret to this is, again, objectivity. Remember, I want to be as objective as I can about where I'm holding. And objectively, I want to be, where's my potential? What should I be heading for? Left to their own devices, a human being, I know for myself, growing up in the kind of environment that I am in, the kinds of things that I would be striving for in life, based on the environment that I was nurtured in, is going to limit my scope. I was talking about this with the cab driver coming in today. Let's give him over the class, testing out the ideas. I said to him, you know, if it's a little kid, if you say a little kid, you can have anything in the world. What's he going to ask for? Candy, a toy. Based on his perspective, he doesn't understand his potential. He doesn't understand what's out there. He never experienced it. He doesn't know what's possible. A kid left up to his own devices won't come out with everything. What we're talking about, if we're talking about achieving our potential and perfection, in Jewish terms, that's not the priest. It's not the rabbi, it's the prophet. A prophet is someone who's achieved a level of perfection at an intellectual sense and a character sense. There's prerequisites to being a prophet. They have prophet school here. A prophet is someone who has knowledge and objectivity. Right? Herb, you might have seen my kids around sometime, but let's say you came over to my house and I was introduced to my son Yonah. He's 4, right? 4-year-old kid in Harnoff. And I'm going to give him an opportunity to make a choice. A bowl of ice cream or a bowl of spinach? What's he going to pick?
Depends on how he's been trained.
4-year-old. He's nowhere near me. He's in your house, okay? You're going to give him an opportunity, ice cream or spinach. What's he going to pick? He's going to pick the ice cream, right? He's going to pick the ice cream. You're not sure? You're sure.
That's a matter of conditioning, though.
Doesn't matter. Let's say it's conditioning. Not for 4, but let's say you know what he's going to pick, right? We know what he's going to pick, whether it's conditioning, nature, nurture, I don't care, but you know what he's going to do. Does he have free will?
Not at that stage.
Does he have free will? The kid has free will. You know what he's going to do before he's going to do it. Are you a prophet? No. You're not a prophet, but you know in advance what he's going to do, and he has free will. How could that be? Because you have knowledge of four-year-olds, you have knowledge of ice cream, you have knowledge of spinach, you have knowledge of the interrelationship between the two, and you have objectivity. See, if you, maybe you're hesitating because you love spinach so much and hate ice cream. See, if you loved spinach so much and hated ice cream, you would project onto the kid your subjective things. How the heck could he not pick the spinach? It's so delicious, right? You might get confused. To the extent that we have knowledge and objectivity, it's going to give us clarity to say what's going to happen. At a certain level, that's part of what a prophet's all about. You can't be a dumb prophet. You can't be a prophet with a big ego. To the extent that we get knowledge and clarity, just like you know what the three-year-old or four-year-old is going to do before he does it, you can know 2,000 years in the future. You connect into a perfect worldview, perfect clarity of the world, how everything works. You connect to God. Yeah, this is what we call a prophetic experience. It's like you flip into it. We want to strive to be great. That's the greatest. Now, we need the chinning bar to be able to measure to see how we're doing against our goal. But I need point B. Now, I'll tell you something. If I would ask any of you to go down to the coast, you can ask whatever you want. You'd come up with a list of 13 things you'd ask for. To the extent that the prophet wrote down these blessings, this is what a prophet asks for. See, if you were a prophet, this would just flow out of your mouth, and this is what you would ask for. To the extent that you're uncomfortable using these words, thank God, that's a message to us. That's how far I got to grow in terms of that becoming an extension of me. And that only happens if you're a prophet, because that's what a prophet asks for. See that? It's a beautiful tool. If we look at it that way, if I'm uncomfortable with it, say, hey, thank God, why am I uncomfortable about it? And I'm sitting there asking, hey, God, bring the Jews back from the four corners of the earth, from everywhere, including America and Canada. To the extent that I'm uncomfortable with it, and I say, oh, man, you know, but what's Israel going to do? You know, we got all these Jews giving money. It's not, but I got to ask for it. It says it over there, but I'm uncomfortable. That's not me. Me says we need to have a certain level of Jewish community here, raising money, sending it over. I'm not comfortable asking for it. I don't really mean it. It's not me, right? I can't see how it could work. You're not a prophet, right? See that? But that's what we're asking for. But it's not me. So we use the prophet's words to say, hey, here's a goal. As an individual, as part of the Jewish people, what have I done between Mincha and Maariv to be working on that goal? What's my contribution? Whether it's bringing the judges back, health. I pray for health for somebody. What am I doing in terms of helping that person get better? I can pray for somebody. Did I pick up the phone? Did I write a note? Did I send a book? Bring a magazine to the hospital? Right? It's a tool. So at one level, there is a mystical level of talking about the words, and our words are an action in them of themselves, right? The Ramchal Lutzata tells us that our words, our thoughts, and actions are all part of the physical reality. So we are doing something, but the level of intensity is much less. If we have an opportunity to do something about it, to act, our actions are what changes us. We're creatures of habit. To the extent that we can do something about these things that we're asking for, it's going to affect, it's going to integrate us, it's going to become a natural thing. We're talking about conditioning ourselves into becoming what we objectively want to become, not what we feel like becoming. That's the power of prayer. So just to summarize, we talked about the idea of prayer means judge oneself. The essence of prayer is asking, and the whole point of the tool is that it's a means to an end of perfecting ourselves. When we said that the idea of asking for something is a tool to get a measure on where we're holding. How am I doing towards my goal? And it gives me an opportunity from one milestone, one prayer session to the next, to be able to put into action, work on my goal, and then check in again. One thing I didn't mention is that we do have, like in business, an annual overhaul. We have the annual meeting. That's the whole month of Elul, Rosh Hashanah period, retrospect the whole previous year, and then do some long-range planning, right, for my life. And then, after I finish with the whole Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur experience, I got to break that long-term goal into a one-year goal. Say, what am I going to work on this year in terms of my long-term goal, and then break it up into bite-sized sections and have those weekly kickoff meetings, as it were, or daily or three times a day kind of meetings. Shabbos is a little extra one there, but Shabbos is time to appreciate, though. We don't ask on Shabbos. We don't ask on Shabbos. But the rest of the week we are asking. Take a look at the prayers, you'll see. Some people don't really notice that, but it's we got everything we need on Shabbos. That's practicing, or getting a chance to feel like what the reward of all this is going to be on Shabbos. We work hard during the six times, but we get a little carrot of an essence of why we're working so hard a whole lifetime. So we said that the tool is to judge ourselves. We asking is an opportunity to judge, to get real with ourselves. Either we're going to stop asking, change what we ask, start mumbling, or do something about it. Hopefully the goal is use it as a tool to do something about it. And I'll tell you something. If we're not ready for it, don't focus so much on that blessing. To the extent, like I recommended with this friend, pick something real, tangible, just to get practice using the tool. Sometimes when we're getting into it, the words of the prophet is like too much of a leap already. Whatever it is, it's like controlling my anger, put that in one of the categories. There's a blessing for sustenance. Put that in there. Put your own private requests inside of the requests that are there. And then with reasonable, achievable goals that are easy to achieve, that you know that are in your control, to ask for the Jewish people to come back to the land, it's like, it's not totally under my control. But learning Hebrew is. Right? So if I pick some small personal things in each one of those general blessings in that category, then prayer can become a more practical tool for us. Okay? So if you have questions, we got a few minutes here. I wanted to leave some time for any questions you had on it.
I've always wondered about my situation where Hebrew is not so good and you don't understand what you're saying. Is it still meaningful?
The Jewish law says that you fulfill your obligation to pray in any language except. If you're going to do it not in Hebrew, you have to understand what you're saying. Okay? If you want to fulfill your obligation, you're asking for something, you have to understand what you're saying. If you want to fulfill your obligation in Hebrew, you have to know that you're praying. You don't have to understand the words, but just by saying the words themselves has an effect and you've fulfilled your obligation to pray. In terms of somebody who's getting into it, I would personally suggest it's probably a good idea to make something that's real so that the tool becomes real for you and then it becomes exciting and a fun thing and a valuable tool to do. It becomes meaningful for you personally. You want to say it in Hebrew quickly without knowing what it is, fine, but then spend time during that session doing your own English thing. Even if you're in a minyan, let's say, and you can't keep up with everybody else, make it meaningful for you. I think the rabbi would agree, yeah. That's what I would suggest. But there's the famous story, the little kid that comes into the synagogue, he doesn't know, and he starts screaming out, Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, screaming out. Or actually, it's not a kid, it's an illiterate man. So the rabbi says, you know, this man, you know, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm saying the letters, only when God put the words together, he knows what I want. So there's a lot of truth to that from a Torah point of view. It's not just a nice story. By saying the Hebrew letters, it's the language that the world was created in. There's a lot of mystical elements in the language. It's having an effect on us. And again, it's affecting something outside of us in a way that we don't understand. But I'm a business guy. It's like, it's hard for me. Any other question?
You say it takes long as you want. You don't know the Hebrew. Everyone's finishing, they're walking out of bed, and you're still standing. You're the only one standing, and everyone else has sat down. It feels a little odd.
Okay, so in that case, that's why they leave a lot of time. There's still a lot of time at the end of the service. What I'm talking about is the 18 blessings in the middle. If you come to shul, and there's the 18 blessings in the middle, there's a whole denouement in the service. Afterwards, there's a lot of things that go on. There's Kaddish and there's Aleinu and they sing all kinds of things, songs sometimes, etc., etc. There's usually enough time, even if you take, and they do the reader's repetition. First you do it yourself and then they repeat it. So that gives you double the amount of time. And then there's all kinds of other things going on. It should give you enough time to complete. And if you don't, you know, you feel like you're embarrassed, shouldn't be embarrassed. So you take three steps back and you continue on. You can do it at home. If you're more comfortable doing it at home, so do it at home in the beginning. We didn't talk about that in terms of why do I have to do it as part of a group?
Yeah.
You like that question? Because everything we've said has nothing to do with anybody else, right? Why do it in a group? Right? So I did this in my house. Try this with your grandchildren. Have fun. My kids did it. We did it one Shabbat. There was somebody over for Shabbat and they asked this question, why do you need a minyan? If the whole thing is to ask for yourself and grow, etc. So I had the kids line up. I said, okay, Esther Leah, you'd like a candy? She says, yeah, Abba, I'd like a candy. Well, first of all, I had her take three steps forward, say, Abba, you're so wonderful. I love you, Abba. Could I please have a candy? So I said to her, well, Esther Leah, what would your Ema say? Did you clean your room today? Did you do this? She says, yeah, Abba, I did everything I was supposed to say. Okay, Esther Leah, here you go. Here's your candy. Right? It's got to be just, right? She says, steps three steps back. Thank you very much, Abba. I'll see you again next time. Okay, bye. So I said, the next one, Racheli, you know, what do you say? She steps three. Abba, you're so wonderful. It's fun. It's good for the ego. But she says, Abba, you're so wonderful. You do so much for me. I love you so much. You know, could I please have a candy? Well, Rachel, did you do your homework? Is, yeah, Abba, I did it all. Great. Here's your candy. Three steps back. Bows three times. Thank you very much, Abba. So, the next one. Abba, you're so wonderful. Could I have a candy? Didn't you break off all the snapdragons in the garden this morning? And didn't you get into a little trouble in the garden, take the dirt and spill it all over the patio? And it, yeah, Abba. I said, well, if I give you a candy today, it's not good for you, man. So go think about it. Work on yourself tomorrow. If you improve, you'll get a candy. It takes three steps back. Get it? If an individual comes and makes the request, that individual, you can't give anybody a free ride. You're not doing anybody any favors. I'm only fueling the kid's inappropriate behavior by giving them the candy when it comes out on the table, one-to-one. I'm only fueling it, so I can't do it. Then I said to them, okay, gang, we're going to try again. Second candy, right? Poor little kid. I don't want to mention his name, right? That's why I didn't say it. Esther Leah and Rachel and the poor little guy. There's the three of them there. I said, now, you want a second candy, kids? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other one wants the first candy. I said, okay, line up. So they all line up, they're standing, boom, 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 and they all take three steps forward, and they say, you know, Abba, you're so wonderful. They do it all together, and they're like real cute. And say, Abba, you know, could we please have a candy? And I said, basically, you kids are basically good kids. You're doing mitzvahs, you're helping. Yeah, we're a good family, we're good kids. I said, okay, here you go, one, two, three. He slipped it in. Now, was it just or unjust? Is his perception he's getting a free ride? We have this inviolable principle, lefum tzara agra, according to the effort is the reward. Is that kid getting a free ride in the wrong message? He slipped in and got the candy and he didn't deserve it.
No, I think, I think because of the group there, it's kind of like a group.
The group is being judged, that's right. But why did he get the candy? What effort did he put in to get the candy, to deserve the candy?
Well, he has to fulfill an obligation now because now he's indebted to the rest of the group.
Yeah, that's right. He sort of has to shape up a little bit. That's right. It's true. It takes a lot of effort, if we're a bum, if I did something wrong, to hang out with nice people. Right? This is how Aaron HaKohen, Aaron, Moshe's brother, used to macarve people. It says in Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary in Pirkei Avos, says, how did Aaron HaKohen macarve people? He'd take a guy he knew that in private was doing terrible things, but in public he wasn't, but he knew it. And he'd go out to him and he says, hey, Shlomi, how you doing? The high priest would become best friends with the guy. He'd treat him like it was his best buddy. Didn't say anything, nothing, just made him a friend. The guy eventually says, oh man, Aaron HaKohen, the high priest, he's my best friend. If he only knew what I was doing. He says, God forbid he should ever find out. I better stop doing it. And the guy would do it. That's how he would do it. Just make friends with him. So it's embarrassing, though, to be associated with a group of people who are doing good and you're the only rotten apple. It's embarrassment. It takes a lot of effort to choose to go and do that. Right? I'm rewarding him for his choice to associate with that group and the values that that group represents. That deserves reward. He's not getting a free ride. I'm not paying him because he broke the flowers. I'm paying him because he chose to associate with that group and he's choosing to make that his goal. He's striving to be like them. That's worth rewarding. It's a heavy thing. You have to be very careful about it. It's not just going to minyan. Which minyan are you choosing to go to? It has an effect. You know, if I'm going to go to a minyan and say, I'm going to go fulfill my obligation to pray, you're missing the whole power of davening in a minyan if you're going to a minyan where everybody's talking business. you're missing the opportunity of slipping into candy when you don't deserve it to say, hey, you know, like, see it? That's one of the ideas of communal prayer, why we would do it in a group. It's a very powerful thing when you see it with the kids with the candy. It's a fun thing to do.
The problem is the candy.
Why?
You know it's bad for them.
Okay. Piece of fruit. You're right.
Important conditioning.
Right.
The same with the ice cream.
You're right.
Ice cream every day.
You're right.
3 meals a day, they'd love the spinach.
You're right.
For one of my grandchildren, if he's denied the, you know, he didn't watch his toilet training, he doesn't get to wear his sissies.
Right.
That's true. He's rewarded.
That's true. And I've tried it. It works sometime, right? So your reward is you're going to get to sit with Abba private time and learn Torah for an hour. That's what you got to say. What's the most valuable thing in the house? The most valuable thing in the house is Torah. So you're a good kid. You're going to get private time with Abba. Going to learn. It depends on their day. You know, they're still kids. They're not adults. So sometimes you have to give them the tangible, concrete thing. But I agree with you. You're absolutely right.
Fruit is the tree.
Fruit's
right. Others, it's candy.
Right.
That's because that's the perception of their mother and what's good.
I don't know. They say you have to educate the child according to his way. And again, you got to give them the carrot and the stick. Not literally, but I'm just saying they have to see consequences to their actions. You have to do it in a certain way. But I agree with you that it's not a healthy thing. But again, that's my problem. You're right. And we shouldn't be laying our trips on our kids. I work on that.
Question about the children taking 3 steps back after you talk to them and give them the candy.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
I'm only doing that not because I would expect them to do it to me. I'm saying that's what we do in terms of prayer.
To the middle, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right.
Familiar.
Okay. So when we're in a traditional service and we're about to do this particular prayer, the Amidah, you might be able to spend some time during the mission, just go through practicals through the Siddur, how we do it. What you'll see people do is, before they start this silent prayer, you've seen that? You've seen the silent prayer?
Well, I understand it in terms of the prayer. I
right.
was relating it to the children and you.
Oh.
That was my question.
Okay, so what we're saying is, in terms of God, it's a king, the King of Kings. So how do you address somebody? You know, my kids are in their bedroom and they yell out, Ema, can you help me find my underpants? You know what I mean? I said, you don't do that. You want your Ema to help you. You get out of your room. You walk all the way through the house into the kitchen where she's standing. You don't make her come to you or stretch to come to you. That's disrespectful. So we say the same thing in prayer. You're going to address God. We want to get psyched up for that. So we take the steps forward. We approach God to where He is. It's chutzpah to say, come and listen to me in my bedroom. So you take 3 steps forward. Then we address it. You just don't like turn your back, your tuchus on. You know, you run around. You say, you got what you wanted from your mom. Then you go run back to your bedroom. Hey, come on. You don't turn your back to your mother. It was step three. You're not going to make them go all the way backwards. 3 steps, you've shown respect, and you can leave. You'll see people, you go down to the Western Wall, the whole way, right? Mm-hmm. You're really, your obligation is three, is to do it. You'll see people go the whole way, backwards.
Also, that also results in another thing, respect for their parent. It also relates to their midah, the approach to, yeah.
Right. I know a particular.
It's a rub-off. It's an early
right.
training session.
Right. The Torah says the reason why we've got parents and we have a mitzvah, an obligation to honor our parents is because it's a tool for us to be able to relate to God, to honor God. It's a tangible tool. So I know a particular rabbi. He has his children address him in the third person. They don't use the word you with respect to him. So would Abba like a cup of coffee? Is it okay with Abba if I go and play with my friend now? They would never say, is it okay with you? You know, and people do that with Rabbi Weinberg. They'll say, would the Rosh Hashiva like a cup of coffee? What does the Rosh Hashiva think about this? It's really a tool for us to learn respect in human terms, but really it's for us to be able to really relate to God. We do relate to God in the second person at certain levels, though. More that he's our father. But again, that's an individual thing in terms of a person's relationship with their own children. Okay, thank you.
You have been listening to aishaudio.com. For information about our online services, visit our website. To contact one of our representatives, write to aishaudio@aish.com. Shalom from Jerusalem.